Oh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
When his sister failed to come home that night, nobody panicked immediately. She was 26, lived on her own, and didn't have anyone waiting up for her. The only reason their mother noticed something might be wrong was because the two of them had plans the following morning. She called around 9, then again closer to 10, and when both calls went straight to voicemail, she sent a text asking if everything was okay. By noon, there was still no response, which was unusual enough that she called her son. He tried his sister several times, then contacted one of her friends and learned she had left the friend's house shortly before 11 the previous night. She had been tired, but completely fine, and was planning to drive straight home. Under normal circumstances, the trip should have taken about 40 minutes. Their mother had the spare key to her daughter's apartment, so he stopped by and picked it up before driving over to check on her. Her car wasn't in the parking lot, and once inside, he quickly realized she probably hadn't made it home. Her overnight bag from the weekend was still sitting near the bedroom door, exactly where she had left it. And the clothes she planned to wear when she met their mother were laid across a chair. By that afternoon, the police were involved. The first assumption was that she had been in an accident somewhere along the route. Most of the drive followed a 2-lane highway that cut through farmland and several heavily wooded areas. So family members began driving it slowly in both directions, looking for anything that might suggest a car had left the road. They found nothing. Police checked hospitals throughout the area and began working through the obvious possibilities while friends and family did the same. Had she decided to stop somewhere? Could she have taken a different route home? Was there anyone she might have gone to see without mentioning it? None of those possibilities led anywhere. Her phone complicated things further. The last available information placed it somewhere along the general route home, but the location wasn't precise enough to tell them exactly where. After that, the phone either lost power or was damaged because every call continued going directly to voicemail. By the end of the first full day, her brother had driven that highway so many times that he felt like he knew every mailbox curve and gravel turnout along the way. There were several places where an accident seemed possible, including one section where the shoulder narrowed and the woods grew almost to the pavement. Searchers stopped anywhere they saw broken vegetation, tire marks, or disturbed ground, but nothing led to his sister or her car. The second day was worse. By then, volunteers had joined the search, and flyers with his sister's picture were being shared online and posted in businesses throughout the area. Police were still working the case, but the family understood that the longer she remained missing, the more possibilities they had to consider. His mother barely slept. She spent hours at the kitchen table with her phone in front of her, answering calls from people who meant well but knew nothing. Every time someone reported seeing a car similar to his sister's, her brother went to check, and every lead ended the same way. Late that second evening, his mother mentioned a psychic. At first, he thought she was talking about someone who had contacted her through social media. Missing person cases always seemed to attract strangers claiming they had visions or knew where someone was, and the police had already warned the family not to trust anyone who suddenly appeared with supposed information. This was different. A woman from their mother's church had given her the name of a psychic she had visited several times. The psychic hadn't contacted the family and didn't advertise herself as someone who solved missing person cases. Their mother would have to reach out to her. Her son told her he didn't think it was a good idea. He wasn't cruel about it because he understood why she was reaching for anything that might help, but he didn't want someone taking advantage of her while she was frightened and exhausted. They had police, volunteers, and people searching miles of roadway. A stranger saying she could sense where his sister was didn't seem like something they needed. His mother agreed with almost everything he said and called the psychic anyway. He went with her, mostly because he wanted to hear exactly what the woman said before his mother acted on any of it. If she started asking for large amounts of money or promising she could somehow bring his sister home, he intended to end the conversation. Instead, the meeting was surprisingly uneventful at first. The psychic worked from a small office connected to her home and asked only for his sister's first name and a recent photograph. When their mother started explaining where her daughter had last been seen, the woman stopped her and said she would rather hear as little as possible until she told them what she was getting. That caught his attention, although not enough to change his mind. The psychic studied the photograph for a while before closing her eyes. When she finally began speaking, the description came in pieces. She kept seeing trees, but not a trail or a place where his sister had walked into the woods. She said there was a road close by and something metallic with her. Then she said she believed his sister was still with her car. Their mother asked whether she meant the car had broken down, but the psychic said no. She believed the car was no longer on the road, and that made her brother listen more carefully. The woman described a steep drop with heavy trees and brush, along with the feeling of looking upward toward something his sister couldn't reach. She believed she was injured and confused, but she did not feel that she was dead. His mother began crying quietly while her son tried to stay focused on what was actually being said. Plenty of roads in the area had trees beside them, and plenty had ditches or embankments. An accident had been the most obvious possibility from the beginning, so none of that was enough to convince him the psychic knew anything they didn't. Then she added something that was harder for him to dismiss. She believed people searching for his sister had already been close to her, maybe more than once. His sister was somewhere below the road, still near the car, and she could hear vehicles passing above her. For some reason, though, the people driving by couldn't see her. His first reaction was still to resist it. Everything the psychic had described could fit an accident along a rural highway, and that was already the most likely explanation for his sister's disappearance. If she had gone off the road in a wooded area, of course there would be trees. If the car had gone down an embankment, she would be below the highway. None of that required anything paranormal. What bothered him was the idea that people had already passed her because he knew they had. Police had driven it, friends had driven it, and volunteers had stopped along several sections to walk through ditches wherever anything looked disturbed. If his sister really was somewhere near that highway, it was entirely possible that some of them had been within a few hundred feet of her without knowing it. Before they left, the psychic tried to describe what she was seeing more clearly. She kept getting the impression of a curve in the road and a drop that was steeper than it appeared from above. There were trees close together enough that the car seemed almost covered, but she didn't feel that it had traveled very far from the highway. She also kept mentioning something pale or light-colored near the road. She couldn't tell whether it was a sign, a post, or part of a guardrail, and she was careful not to pretend she knew more than she did. She only repeated that his sister felt close to traffic and that the searchers needed to look down rather than out. His mother wanted to go immediately, but her son convinced her to stay home while he called one of his cousins, who had been helping with the search. He still wasn't comfortable calling the police and telling them a psychic had given him a location, especially when it wasn't really a location at all. Instead, he said there were a few stretches of road he wanted to check more carefully and asked his cousin to come with him. They started near the friend's house and followed the route his sister would most likely have taken. This time, they weren't simply looking through the windshield. Whenever they reached a wooded section with a significant drop, they pulled over safely and walked back along the shoulder. The first two places gave them nothing. They found trash, old tire tracks, and broken branches that looked promising until they got close enough to see they had been there for months. At the third stop, his cousin finally asked why they were suddenly concentrating on embankments. He told him about the psychic. The reaction was exactly what he expected. His cousin didn't laugh, but he clearly didn't think a psychic should be directing a search. Still, he agreed that walking the road again wasn't hurting anything. They had already spent 2 days following weaker leads from strangers online, so they kept going. About 10 miles farther along, the highway entered one of the most heavily wooded sections of the route. His brother remembered searching there the first day, although mostly from the car. The road curved several times, and the shoulder narrowed enough in places that stopping wasn't easy. Then he noticed a short stretch of guardrail, galvanized metal that looked dull silver, in the afternoon light. The psychic's comment about something pale near the road came back to him immediately. Although he knew there were guardrails all over the area and didn't want to make an ordinary roadside feature fit simply because he needed it to, he almost kept driving, but something about that section bothered him. He went another quarter mile until he found a safe place to turn around, then came back and pulled as far onto the shoulder as he could. His cousin followed. The guardrail protected the outside of a curve where the ground dropped sharply into woods from the roadway. The slope didn't look especially unusual because thick brush hid most of it. His brother remembered looking down there during one of the earlier drives and seeing nothing, but this time they got out and walked the shoulder slowly. For the first several minutes, nothing stood out. The grass along the edge was high, and the brush beyond it was dense enough that they could see only a short distance down the slope. His cousin found the first sign. A small section of grass near the end of the guardrail had been pressed almost flat. It wasn't an obvious tire track, and there was no long skid mark across the pavement. If they hadn't been standing directly over it, they probably would have ignored it. His brother climbed over the guardrail, and almost immediately he realized how deceptive the terrain had been from above. The slope was much steeper than it looked from the road, and within a few steps he had to grab branches to keep his balance. Once he dropped below the level of the shoulder, the highway nearly disappeared from view, even though the sound of traffic remained perfectly clear. That was when the psychic's words came back to him in a way they hadn't before. She had said his sister could hear people passing above her. He continued downward while his cousin followed more carefully behind. At first, all they saw were leaves, brush, and tree trunks, but about 30 yards from the road, his brother noticed a piece of dark plastic on the ground that clearly didn't belong there. He picked it up and immediately recognized it as part of a car. Neither man said much after that. They began following a line of disturbed brush farther down the embankment, where more broken branches appeared along with scraped bark on one of the trees and a section of ground where something heavy had clearly passed through. Then his cousin saw the car. It was wedged between several trees near the bottom of the slope, turned at an angle and partly hidden by brush. From the highway above, there was almost no chance anyone could have seen it. His brother started down toward it before his cousin had even finished calling out. The front end was badly damaged, and one side of the car was pressed against a tree. When he reached the driver's window, he could see his sister slumped against the seat. For one terrible moment, she didn't move. He hit the glass with the flat of his hand and shouted her name, and after a few seconds, her head shifted slightly. His cousin was already calling 911 while her brother tried the driver's door, but it was jammed. He moved around to the passenger side, pushing branches out of the way, and finally saw her turn her face toward him. She was alive. She was barely conscious, injured and far too weak to get herself out of the car, but she was alive. Her brother stayed beside her while they waited for emergency crews, talking to her and trying to keep her awake until sirens finally became audible somewhere above them. Only then did he look up through the trees toward the highway. Cars were still passing overhead just as they had been for the last 2 days. And from where he stood beside his sister's car, he could hear every one of them. Getting his sister out of the car took much longer than finding her. Firefighters and paramedics had to make their way down the embankment with equipment, stabilize the vehicle, and work carefully around the damaged driver's side. Her brother stayed close until they asked him to move back, then stood with his cousin several yards away and watched as the rescue unfolded. She had been trapped for almost 2 days. At the hospital, they learned she had a broken leg, several fractured ribs, a concussion, and significant dehydration. She had drifted in and out of consciousness after the crash, which probably explained why she hadn't been able to do more to attract attention, even during the periods when she could hear traffic above her. Her phone had been thrown onto the passenger side floor during the impact, far enough away that she couldn't reach it from where she was pinned. Considering how long she had been there, doctors said she was extremely fortunate. Her brother didn't tell anyone at the hospital about the psychic. There were too many other things happening, and at that point, he was simply relieved to have his sister back. Their mother arrived crying before she even reached the room, and for the next several hours, the family concentrated on her injuries and what recovery was going to look like. It wasn't until the following afternoon, when his sister was more alert, that she began talking about what she remembered. She remembered leaving her friend's house and driving normally for most of the way home. She wasn't entirely sure what caused the accident. She thought an animal might have come into the road, or she may simply have drifted too close to the shoulder and overcorrected. Whatever happened, she remembered the car leaving the pavement and then dropping so quickly that she barely understood what was happening before she hit the trees. After that, her memories came in pieces. At some point, she realized the car was well below the highway. She could see only fragments of sky through the trees, and from her position inside the vehicle, there was no way to climb out. She tried the horn early on, but she wasn't sure how long it worked. Eventually, the battery weakened, and after that, she had little she could do except yell whenever she heard something above her. Then she said something that made her brother stop her. She had heard cars, constantly. Even when she couldn't see the highway, she could hear vehicles passing overhead. Several times she had heard them slow down, and once she was certain a vehicle had stopped somewhere nearby. She had shouted until her throat hurt, convinced someone was finally coming down to find her. Nobody did. Her brother asked whether she remembered hearing searchers specifically, and she said she couldn't know who the vehicles belonged to. But there had been moments when she thought people were close. She remembered hearing a car door slam at least once and voices somewhere above her, although she couldn't make out what they were saying. That was the moment the psychic stopped being something he could comfortably dismiss. He told his sister what had happened, and he explained that their mother had contacted a psychic, that he had gone along expecting very little, and that the woman had described her as injured, still with the car and somewhere below the road in heavy trees. He also told her the detail that had ultimately bothered him enough to go back out searching. The psychic believed she could hear people passing above her, even though they couldn't see her. His sister stared at him for several seconds. That was exactly what it had felt like. People had been right there, and she had no way to make them know where she was. Her brother still tried to be careful about what he made of it. The psychic had not handed them a map or named the highway. She had described a wooded embankment along a route where they were already considering the possibility of an accident. Even the guardrail could have been coincidence, but he also knew what had happened after they left her office. So they had stopped searching from their cars and started looking below the road. and that was how they found his sister. Once she was home recovering, their mother called the psychic to tell her she had been found alive. The woman seemed relieved, but didn't act as though she had accomplished something extraordinary. That was the last contact the family had with her. His sister eventually recovered, although the broken leg took months to heal, and she remained nervous about that stretch of highway for a long time. The family occasionally talked about the search, but the psychic became the part of the story they never quite knew what to do with. His brother remained skeptical in ways that surprised some people. He didn't suddenly start believing every person who claimed to have psychic abilities, and he knew that desperation could make families connect vague statements to whatever they most wanted to hear. He understood all of that. What he could never explain was why this particular woman had repeatedly insisted that his sister was alive, still inside or beside her car, hidden below the road while traffic passed overhead. Before meeting her, he had driven past that stretch himself more than once. He had looked toward those woods and seen nothing. It took someone who had never traveled that highway, never met his sister, and knew almost nothing about the search to make him stop looking across the road and start looking down. He never decided exactly what that meant. He only knew that when they finally climbed over that guardrail, his sister was right where the psychic said she would be. And she was still alive.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast!
Stop the podcast!
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.